Hey friends, before the video starts, I just want to say sorry about the slow uploads. It's been crazy here the past few weeks. And now I'm starting college on the 31st, so that might be another challenge on its own. I will do my best to keep the uploads coming and making the best content that I can for you guys. Alright, thank you so much, and without further ado, here we go. This story happened around 4 years ago, when I was 15 years old, and we moved into this house. Sorry about grammar and stuff. Me no good at it. Backstory. We lived in a small tourist town. School K-12 in one building. And population of 700. Not during tourist season, kind of small. There was this weird druggie that everyone knew and hated. He lived in one of his parents' houses and didn't pay rent, so they decided to kick him out. My parents were friends with the family, and helped take care of his kids when he couldn't. So we were on pretty good terms. They gave the druggie, I'll call him just D for short, 30 days to move out for failing to pay a small rent check in his miserable life. We weren't doing very well at all financially, and needed somewhere to stay or rent. We began talking to D's parents about the house, and they said we could begin renting to buy soon as he moved out. The 30-day mark came around, and we asked D if he was ready. And he acted like he knew nothing about what we were talking about. His parents said they were going to give him some extra days and help him move his stuff. So we waited another month. At this point, the current place we were staying, we had to move out in a few days. We went to the house and went inside to see all of D's stuff still there. We decided we couldn't wait and just bagged his stuff up and told him to pick it up. Fast forward about a year. We always heard scurrying like mice and stuff in the ceiling. We had a ton of strange animals like mice, snakes, lizards, chinchillas, etc. One of our four snakes went missing from its closed tank, with clips holding down the lid. There were no holes anywhere to be found. We didn't think anything of it, but it was a bit strange. Eventually we started hearing louder sounds and our dad said it was just the house settling. Stuff was disappearing from the fridge, electrical bill went up, we smelled smoke, etc. Us kids got blamed for it all, and got our phones and my PC taken away. But the power bill was still up. And I also got blamed for smoking in the house, which my parents had no reason to believe or promote this accusation. So I got grounded until graduation. I was mad now because I did not smoke in our house. I was unbelievably bored one day, not being able to do anything, so I decided to explore our attic. I opened the door. Holy shit. My mom then came up the ladder ready to beat me, and saw it too. A bed, microwave, mini fridge, cigarettes, unsmoked blunts, etc. Guess who? It's Druggy. He then came back that night, through my little sister's window. He was higher than I'd ever seen a person, and admitted to a bunch of stuff and we recorded. He took the snake and let it loose to get rid of the mice. He smoked in our house. He snuck in through my little sister's room every night. In court, he then admitted to making a small hole in the floor of the attic, to which my little 11-year-old sister slept at night. We changed all locks, got a Ring doorbell, placed higher security locks on all windows, and more. And the worst part of all, this creep only got 6 months probation for marijuana possession, which wasn't yet legal in my state. He got only 1 year of prison for breaking and entering for an entire year, almost every day. What kind of bullshit system is that? He didn't have to pay a pretty heavy fine for damages and had to pay us back a year's worth of our electric bill. We are now out of debt and my parents are living steadily, because he finally finished paying all the fines to us. My sister has to go to a therapist twice a week, and might never get a good night to sleep again. To give you a little backstory, I have a nervous tic, where I laugh at the most awkward and inappropriate moments. I've always said that I would probably laugh, even if someone was causing me physical harm. Now to the actual story. My family and I own a small business in a not-so-great part of town. One day I was just eating a sandwich and watching The Young and Restless, as I did every day with a coworker. Also, we were the only two there at the time. I look up and saw a figure peering through our display window, but I assumed they were checking out the awesome display my mom had put in there, because sometimes people came in to see what creative displays she had come up with that season. They suddenly opened the door and shut it, and I thought, that's odd. So I stand up and see what's going on. That's when I see a tall figure with a full face banana mask, and only his eyes and mouth out. He comes through the door and demands us to give him the money. Naturally, I freak out, but I have always been told to just give them what they want, and don't protest to it, which is what I had planned on doing. Next thing I know, my coworker stands up and says run, as she's running towards the back. So I was like, okay, and I ran too. I went through the back door assuming she was right behind me, and I get all the way to the back of the driveway, and I turn around and see that she's not there. So I start panicking like, where is she? I'm just standing there like a dumbass because I honestly don't even know what to do at this point, and I'm still trying to process what the hell just happened. I start walking down to the bank on the road beside us to tell them to call the cops, since I left my cell phone inside. Then I hear a deep-voiced man say, "Take me to the money," in a hateful tone. I turn around and there is the man pointing a gun at me. So I just say okay, while freaking out obviously, and I go with him. And then I start laughing, like some kind of crazy person, and he gets agitated. He then yells at me to walk faster with the gun pointed at my back. So I tell him I'm sorry, which why the hell should I be sorry? So I give him the whole $50 we had in our register, and he takes me to the back and tells me to stand there and count to 20. So I do what he says and then yell for my coworker, trying to figure out where the hell she went. Like, did they have her or what? No worries though, she was safe hiding in the bathroom. The cops never found out who did it, but they didn't actually seem too concerned, since he only got $50. Never mind the fact that someone had to go through a traumatic experience. Also a side note, I posted on Facebook that I would probably say I'm sorry to someone, even if they were trying to rob me 2 days before this happened. Luckily, this was a while ago, and I have less anxiety about it than I used to. Although, all these people wearing these bandana masks due to COVID put me on edge lately. So to the robber who held a gun at me for $50, let's not meet again. This happened years ago when I was about 17. I'm 30 now, male for context. When I was a teenager, I lived in Marin County, a quiet suburb just north of San Francisco. However, most of my buddies live in San Francisco, and most nights of the week I would be found riding my bicycle back and forth across the Golden Gate Bridge. I enjoyed those long bike rides at night. I'd often be high as a kite, iPod on my favorite playlist, passing by weirdos and street urchins, or admiring the desolate beauty of the bay. Sausalito, an empty in Bacardio. One of my favorite places to ride my bike was through the Presidio. The Presidio is the last neighborhood you pass in San Francisco before making your way onto the Golden Gate Bridge. It's famous for its old, beautiful military housing, an old airfield and hangars that had been converted into a seaside park, an enormous eucalyptus tree and forest. At nighttime, it's dead quiet, and the only people you see out are late-night Chinese fishermen on the pier down on the water, or people flying down the freeway into the city. Anyways, this night I was coming back from hanging around with some friends, and riding my bike through the Presidio on my way home. I was leisurely gliding down the hill when I noticed a small older black car, something like an Oldsmobile, coming up the road, perpendicular to the one I was coming down. As I got closer, the black Oldsmobile took a left, blinding me for a moment with its lights as it passed. I didn't think too much of it at the time. Here and there you might see a couple cruising to get out and make out by the bridge, or a car full of kids going to smoke a joint at the old pet cemetery beneath the highway overpass. A few minutes later, I had mostly climbed the hill that took you closer to the entrance of the bridge and looked down on Crissy Field. This road is dark with barely any lights, and I was enjoying looking down towards the water to my right, when I heard a car coming from behind me. I looked behind me and saw the same Oldsmobile, maybe 20 yards behind me with its lights off, strangely driving at a slow crawl. I tried to wave them past, but the car just kept on rolling slowly behind me. It was too dark to see who might have been driving. The fact that the car had its lights off had almost immediately struck me as a red flag, as well as its obviously slow trail behind me. I gave it a few more yards and tried to wave it again, but nothing. Spooked, I made a sharp left on my bicycle and began bombing down the hill in the opposite direction of the Oldsmobile. This route would take me back deeper into a more secluded wooded area by the cemetery and air hangars. For a moment I felt relieved until I heard a screech in the car wheels, and glanced behind me to see that the black Oldsmobile lights still off, now passing behind trees coming down the same hill as me. The Oldsmobile had to have made an extremely unusual U-turn, especially considering how narrow the roads are in Presidio. Terrified now, I began pedaling faster away from the Oldsmobile, but as I picked up pace, so did the Oldsmobile, and it was quickly gaining my tail. Using all my strength, I pedaled as fast as I could up the small hill and jumped off my bike, throwing it off the edge of the road and to the left into some bushes, and quickly jumped off the road to hide. Hanging off the side of a hill, hidden in ivy, I was just below the road. I looked up, but I couldn't see anything, but I could hear the Oldsmobile pass. I waited, and a few minutes later I heard the car slowly approaching. No indication from headlights, and then passed by, and again, and again, and again. For nearly 20 minutes or so, I hid in the bushes as I heard the Oldsmobile pass back and forth overhead. Finally, I mustered up the courage to get back on my bicycle, and ride as fast as I could, possibly, back to the bridge. In the darkness, listening to myself pant, it felt like forever, but finally I could see the glaring bright lights of the Golden Gate Bridge. But then, again I heard the car. I looked behind me to see the Oldsmobile again trailing me. I fucking smashed and made into the parking lot of the bridge toll. Rode up to the pedestrian sidewalk next to the toll and got off my bike, under the light, and chain smoked for a while. I never saw the car pass into the bridge, nor did I see it again once I made it to Marin. Me and my friend Alex went hiking in Okanagan. He met this girl on the internet on a website called Nexopia, so I went with him just in case this girl turned out to be a guy. So me and Alex made it there to this town, and we phoned the girl. She ended up turning out to be a girl, and she brought a friend with her. After hanging out with them for 2 days, we then parted away from them. When we were on our way back home, we got picked up by the police, and then they questioned us about how we knew them, and where did we meet them. And like the whole time we were with the two girls, they kept looking over their shoulders when a car passed by. And when a cop drove by, they would bury themselves into me and Alex, and I noticed something weird about them, but not sure what it was until the next day. When we were picked up by the police, we were walked away from the girls. I looked back while the cops were putting us into the back of the cruiser. The two girls ran away very fast. Turns out the two girls escaped from a mental hospital, and they were sent there for hurting someone, and they both got out of a psych ward prison of January 14th, 2020. So me and my friend go and decide to hit up a local McDonald's at 11 p.m. for some McFlurries, and while we were there, we both seen this crazy looking guy in there talking to himself, with a cup of coffee from McDonald's. He kept going in and out talking to himself, kept saying that this is the train station, and he had two duffel bags, so on the 10th time, he went outside. And I should also add that me and my friend are two guys, and so the staff on shift were all young females, and two of them came up to us, asking if we could stay inside with them. When we were done with our McMuffins, we got up to leave, and the two workers came back, and say that they would give me and my friend Logan a free mega meal, like two Big Mac meals each and fries, if we stayed in, so we agreed, because that guy crept them out so much, and I told Logan to lock the other side of the McDonald's doors. And I locked the doors where the train station guy kept on, where he kept walking back and forth near the dumpsters. So, I still have one of the female workers with me. They say I should look in the two duffel bags inside. It was a bunch of Tech Nines, submachine guns, three handguns, and some duct tape. And handcuffs in one of the bags was more guns and a bunch of drugs. So we make a phone call to the RCMP, and the train station guy was banging on the doors to get back in, and kept screaming train station. The police arrived and take him away. Turns out the guy was wanted by law enforcement in three different cities, and four provinces. He broke out of a mental hospital, and he also had some zap straps, and was going to kill someone he wrote in a bunch of books about, that he was going to do that. And P.S. My town is in B.C., Canada. We both ended up getting jobs at the McDonald's. Okay, so me and my friends Marcus, Matt, Alex, Kevin, we're all playing Xbox Live on a game called Left 4 Dead. And on the first mission, this girl joins our online game. And then she asks who's single, and I'm the only one that was at the time. Then she starts asking me weird stuff. Then she sends me nudes of herself on Xbox Live messages. And I was being cocky to her, saying I've seen better. Then she sends more to me, and it started to creep me out about it, cause all the nudes she kept sending me. The next part really creeps me out. She goes on about wanting to have kids, and she has frozen her eggs when she was 17. She's 24 or 25. Then she says over voice chat that she wants me to go to the hospital and send her my sperm to the hospital. And I was like, what the fuck? This is fucking nuts. I said to her, and she kept talking to me as if I was her boyfriend or husband, like I've never met her until I had a kid with another girl. And she was keeping a secret that she has another boyfriend. And he was smacking my kid around. For that guy's safety, the cops took me to the hospital. And then when I was up there, I met the crazy girl from the Xbox Live, Left 4 Dead. Then she's like, it's you. And she wanted to have sex. She was very weird. I ended up seeing her once I got out. She comes to my place, which is weird because I've never told her where I lived, or what city I'm from. I don't know what compelled me to finally share this, but I have been thinking about it a lot these past few days, and thought it'd fit the sub relatively well. I'm one of those really long-time lurkers who has been sitting on their own story for ages, but I finally got around to writing my experience down, and hope someone out there finds this interesting to read. Apologies in advance for the length, I have a lot of thoughts about this, as it was the first and only time I felt legitimately afraid for my life. When I was about 8 years old, my parents were going through a divorce, and me and my older sister used to spend a lot of time at our grandparents' house. It's a long, ranch-style home, on a corner, in a very nice neighborhood. That's a 10-minute walk away from the gas station, grocery store, and a few fast-food restaurants. The streets are long and lined with well-manicured houses, cradled with big, scenic California Valley hills all around. We were never really wealthy, but my grandpa bought it as a fixer-upper many years ago, and the property value has skyrocketed since then. As you can imagine, it's a very safe spot, and although there weren't many other kids in the neighborhood, it wasn't uncommon to see neighbors walking their dogs or pushing a stroller down the sidewalk outside of our house. Although my mom was especially protective of all of our lives, this particular neighborhood was densely populated, and my family knew just about everyone who lived there. She grew up in the neighborhood herself, so she was understandably trusting. She would once in a while let me and my sister walk to the Rod and Robbie gas station on the other end of the block to grab a snack. I would always get a ring pop, and my sister would grab a Three Musketeers before we made it on our way back home. My sister was about 11 at the time, and in this small amount of freedom was a really big deal to us. Nothing compared to walking down that street all by ourselves in the summertime, laughing and joking around. a couple of dollar bills in her pocket. I felt like I owned the world. The one oddity I ever noticed around the neighborhood was a small camper parked in the side of the road opposite of the gas station, right along the backside of the fence of another house. It sat there in that shade like a permanent fixture, all the windows constantly covered by opaque beige curtains. I can't explain why, but it always gave me this deep sense of foreboding when I passed it. It was almost positive someone was living inside of it because, at the time, I'd hear the air conditioning running as it sat stagnant in the same spot. The hairs on my neck would always stand on end as I passed it, particularly as I passed the camper door, and I'd always keep an eye on it for the fear that one day it'd swing open just as I came to pass it. I think what bothered me the most was the drawing taped to the door from the inside. It was a extremely messy, a sketch of odd lines in a brown colored pencil that was ferociously inscribbled. I could see the outline of something, a vague shape, but I could never make out what it was intended to be. I never had the nerve to stop and stare long enough to really investigate. But each time I walked by, I'd steal a glance. A year prior to the incident I'm about to describe, I was walking with my mom past the camper in the shade. We had just gone to the park nearby and, unfortunately, I had to pass the camper before we could cross the street and continue walking. I didn't want to seem afraid, so I kept on walking right behind her, and didn't object when she walked past it. This time I felt a little more brave. I was frustrated not being able to decipher the drawing for so long, and while my mom was a few feet away, I stopped in front of the camper door and took a moment to really look at the drawing. Upon closer inspection, the paper was filthy. I remember doing a project in elementary school where we soaked printer paper in black coffee to make it look aged, and that's what it reminded me of. My mom walked on without noticing I'd stopped following her, but my eyes stayed fixed on the indistinct mass of dirt cake scribbles until I could make out what looked like to be a tiny, malformed face. My stomach turned. I immediately felt cold and disgusted as my eyes tailored over the rest of the image. I didn't know what kind of creature it was at the time, but now I can look back and say that the drawing was a badly deformed fetus inside of a mass of large, perfect circles, like those made by a circular ring roller. Its face was contorted as if it was in pain. It was so graphically disturbing and seemed to portray this odd sense of suffering that stuck with me for days. As a child, I didn't know how to process it, and the mental image still makes me sick to think about. I'd never seen anything like it before. Adrenaline flooded my body and my chest hurt with fear. But I selfishly thought of my glorious little trips to the Ring Pops and said absolutely nothing as I followed behind my mom. This was, in retrospect, a classically terrible idea. It's one of those things you scream at main characters in movies for. Ever since my ill feeling towards the camper had been elevated by the drawing on the door, I thought about it every time we drove by, and about a month later, my mom once again graced us with several bucks and permission to walk down to Ron Robbie and grab our respective snacks. I thought about telling my sister about what I had seen on the way there, but she was older and braver, and I was terrified to make her cross the street with me to check it out. It was a bright sunny day, and I told myself with false certainty that nothing was going to happen. If I didn't acknowledge it, maybe it'd go away. We walked past the camper, and it was thankfully uneventful. On the walk back, I was feeling more comfortable, and was focused on fighting open my candy wrapper, while my sister walked alongside me. We passed the camper a second time, but I didn't give it as half much of a thought at the first time. I don't remember what we were talking about, but I recall being interrupted mid-sentence by my sister softly yet firmly saying my name. There was a distinct fear in her voice that immediately set me on edge, like a bucket of ice water. All my senses heightened, and I became aware of everything, including the sound of a haphazard footsteps about 10 feet behind us. It was accompanied by a heavy rustling sound, like a heavy backpack. And nervously, I half turned my head to look. A man with a long, unkempt beard and wearing many layers of rad clothes stood behind us, eyes unmistakably burning into our backs as he walked. His movements weren't normal. It was a drunken shuffle, like each of his feet were unimaginably heavy and needed to be moved one grand effort at a time. His shoulders were screwed, his head tilted downward, with a strange arch of his neck. I could hear his shoes scraping the gravel with every step, but rather than seeming genuinely intoxicated, it was as if he was intentionally meandering our direction like a zombie, with a direct effort to frighten us. Behind him, I saw the camper door was wide open for the first time in all the years we'd spent living there, and realized that this was the man who had been living inside. "He's following us," I choked down, my eyes filling with tears. My mind was spinning as I stared straight ahead again, the wide street and sidewalks abnormally empty all around. My sister grabbed my hand. She squeezed it hard, enough to hurt without looking my way, speaking carefully under her breath. "On the count of three, we race home," she told me in a very serious tone of voice. I couldn't reply though, the growing lump in my throat, but every single cell in my body understood we had to put some distance between us and this man as quickly as possible. She began to count steadily while we walked faster, and the most terrifying part is that he started running before we even had a chance to. He must have heard her directions to me and tried to get ahead by sprinting in our direction before she got to three. But his footsteps were noisy, and we bolted like deer the instant we heard him behind us. I'll never forget it. The chase felt like exactly like you'd imagine in your nightmares. The fear your pursuer is inches away from grabbing your arm or a fistful of your hair. I pictured myself being dragged into the van where nobody would see or hear me. We ran so fast, we didn't even have the breath to scream. And peering back behind about 10 seconds later, I saw him running in our direction, with absolutely none of the impairments he had shown with those zombie-like step movements before. I think back on it now, and he may have been deliberately pretending to be handicapped to lower our guard so we wouldn't start running. The thought is terrifying, but I can't rationalize it any other way. We made it to our grandparents' house and, without looking behind us, yanked open the stubborn old door before slamming it closed and scrambling past their excited dogs to get as deep in the house as possible. I didn't even think we locked it, as our main goal was to get within the line of sight of any adults as quickly as possible. My mom was talking to my grandpa at the table and gave us an amused look when we bounded into the living room. Since we were kids, running around wasn't anything out of the ordinary. And she didn't even ask what happened as we collapsed on the couch and tried to catch her breath. The inside of the house felt so safe, and felt in such good spirits that I didn't even want to bring up what had just happened. Like waking up from a nightmare, you didn't want to talk about it. I was desperate to go back to normalcy. I wanted to forget it entirely, to unwrap my candy and act like everything was completely normal for the sake of my own sanity. And that's exactly what I did. I asked my sister a few years back if she remembered the incident. I'm 25 and she's 28 now, and her response was strange. She remembered immediately without the need for me to provide details, but she quickly waved it off and insisted that he had been a bored homeless man, looking to spook some kids walking around with no intent to harm anyone. I don't know. I'd like to believe it's some innocent misunderstanding, but like they always say about gut feelings, they're rarely wrong. I feel in my soul that he wanted to hurt me and my sister that day. I never told her or anyone else about the strange drawings in the floor, and I'm not sure if my sister saw the open door and connected him to the camper or not. It's one of my biggest regrets, as I would hate for any other child to have been less fortunate after innocently walking past the camper in the shade. I believe he may have chosen the spot between the park and the gas station deliberately, due to the number of children walking around that area. I never saw the camper again, a day or so after this. I'm not proud of how I handled this, and would encourage anyone who finds themselves in a similar situation to contact authorities immediately for the safety of others around. I don't know if maybe this whole story comes off as melodramatic, but it was a very real and very frightening in a way I can't forget. So, possibly deranged camper guy by the gas station, whatever your intent was, let's not meet. To really understand the story, or maybe how it happened, you need to know a few things first. I live in Belgium, and at the time of the events, 2018, I lived at a home with my parents, siblings, older brother and sister, and my sweet dog. Looking back now, maybe the dog was a bit too sweet. Almost important to the note that my family is all over the place. Everybody is always busy doing something. Everyone has a very different rhythm, and some days we live next to each other instead of with each other. So that is why at the time, I don't really know who was home and who wasn't. We do love each other. So in 2018, on a school night, I woke up to some noises in my room. I was confused and looked at my phone. It was around 3 a.m. You know that feeling when you wake up very abruptly and don't know if you're dreaming or awake? It was kind of how I felt. There's a street light right to my window. So even though the curtains were closed, I could still make out some silhouette and figures. As I had just woke up and wasn't really thinking, I thought the silhouettes I saw in my room was my older brother. I was sleep drunk, as you could call it, and started asking him what he was doing, but he didn't really react. I saw him walking towards my jewelry, and asked him again what he was doing. Again, my brother didn't respond. I was still laying in bed and began to feel angry because I had school the next day, and had just got up early. And as you do with irritating siblings, I started to curse him out. Jopie, get the F out, I have school tomorrow. Jopie is the name of my brother, by the way. This time he looked at me, again, but didn't say anything. He started to walk towards my handbag and started looking in it, and taking things out. At this point I was just angry at my brother, and finally got out of bed. Mind you, the lights are still off. I walked towards him and asked him again, "What the F are you doing? Get out!" And I physically started pushing him slightly towards the door. Then he spoke. "Where's the money? Where is the money?" In a very strange, almost fake accent. And seriously, I started laughing it off. I still thought it was my brother. "Okay. I don't know if you're drunk or just being an asshole, but get out." By this time, we're almost at the door, and I was still pushing him out. He left and I closed the door. Finally, I thought as I went back to bed, but I started feeling unsettled. I got nervous and scared and started thinking it over. Didn't it smell like cigarettes? Jopie doesn't smoke. Why would he act so strange? So, just to be sure, I text my brother, "Where are you?" His answer made my heart sink to my knees. "I just left the gym, home in a minute." I immediately called him and frantically explained that there was someone in my room. I started crying as I panicked and asked him what to do. He said to call the police and stay in my room. As the gym was really close to our home, my brother came home like literally a minute or two later. I was still upstairs on the phone with the police while I heard my brother yell a whole lot of curse words and "get out." At that point, I was in the upstairs hallway because my sister woke up and was standing there too. My father fell asleep downstairs on the couch, so when he heard my brother scream, he immediately woke up and knew something was wrong. He went to the downstairs hall and saw my brother chasing the intruder. At this point, they were already at the front door. My brother managed to take a backpack from the intruder, but sadly he got away and fled. My brother didn't get a good look at him though. So the police came and I was actually in shock. All the time my mother was asleep because she's on some strong sleep meds. She woke up during the chase when my sister and I were standing in the hallway. I was crying and she came up to us. I frantically told her what had happened and she said, "Little one, that was a very bad dream." That's one of the things we still laugh about today. While we were talking to police, we had to describe the person. I told them exactly what had happened and how he looked. Due to the streetlight, I could see the clothes he was wearing. He had a hood on, so I didn't see his face. And when I was close, he turned his back towards me. So I'm telling the police lady about the black pants and green hoodie. Then she abruptly stopped me. Green? Your brother said light gray. That's the second my heart dropped to the floor. There were two guys, not one. Both my brother and I were 100% sure what we saw. So there had to have been two guys. They took a few iPads, phones, and wallets. But luckily my brother took the backpack where they had a lot more valuable things that they didn't get away with. But the burglars were kind of stupid, because we still had the Find My on all our Apple devices, and they were still running. A day later, when we saw the other location, my brother jumped in his car with my father, while on the phone with the police. Really, my brother is a badass. Going to the gym at night, he is in the military. Chasing intruder through the house, I wouldn't F with him. They waited for the police, and they went to the house where the location of the devices was, and found one guy. He was crying and covered in his own piss and puke. They arrested him and he confessed. He said he was high on drugs and it was the first time he had ever did something like that. He was very panicky and crying the whole time. My brother recognized him as the intruder he chased. So that meant the guy who was in my room was still out there. The guy snitched on the other guy, but he was nowhere to be found. We all kind of got on with our lives, but I was really scared. I slept with my lights on for more than a year, and every time I would be awake past 3 a.m, I couldn't sleep anymore. The intruders they caught went to jail for a year. He was a first-time offender and is now in rehab program. He has sent us a letter or two with our consent, and we kind of feel bad for him. He was traumatized too. About half a year ago, we heard that the second man was taken to custody. I was finally over it. I mean, it wasn't as bad as the beginning, but of course, I still got scared sometimes. But now they finally caught the man who was in my room. What we found out wasn't settling by the least. While the dude that pissed himself didn't have a record before this happened, the dude that was in my room was a very experienced criminal. He had multiple possession charges, theft, drunk driving, and worst of all, assault and attempted homicide. The man I talked to, cursed out and pushed out of my room at 3 a.m. was dangerous, and I'm very happy to be alive. So, about 2 years ago, a friend of mine had moved into his own apartment. The sofa that was in it was old and worn, so we decided that he would find a better one in a better condition. He asked me to help him look for one as my dad had a van, and he would need it to use to transport the sofa. So we went on Craigslist to have a look at what other people had for sale. We came across one ad that was stated as 3-seater cream leather sofa, great condition, free to first viewer. There was a picture of it, and it looked in perfect condition. Now the ad had been up there for a week, so we had thought that maybe it was already gone, and that they had just forgotten to take down the ad. So my friend contacted the seller, and nearly instantly got a reply saying that they still had the sofa, and it was available if we could collect it. I was a bit weary that it was still available. I mean, a free sofa in perfect condition that had been up for a week, and nobody has taken it yet. We thought that maybe there was something wrong with it. That could only be noticed when viewing the sofa. That was maybe hidden from the pictures. It was a weekend and we had no plans, so we decided that we would go check out the sofa. My friend contacted the seller back and organized a time and place to meet up. They decided on a local McDonald's car park at 9 p.m, as the seller said that he was in work until 8 p.m. and would need time to get ready after work. The seller said that he would be driving a green Honda Accord with a trailer. So we pulled up to the McDonald's park at about 8:50 p.m. There was loads of other people around, so we had no reason to think that we'd be in any danger or anything. At around 8:55, my friend got a text saying that the seller was going to be about 15 minutes away, and they asked him to describe what vehicle we were in. So we described the van that we're in to him. About 5 minutes after he had texted the seller what vehicle we were in, an overweight man around 50 years old, with a gray scruffy beard and greasy gray hair, approached the driver's side window of the van, which was on my side, as I was driving the van. He was wearing a plain white t-shirt, with what looked like food stains all over it, with black jeans with holes torn in them, and dried mud stains all over them along with a pair of black steel-toed cap boots, also covered in dried mud. He knocked on my window, so I rolled it down a bit.
"You boys here for the sofa?"
he said in a gravelly voice. It sounded like he needed to cough, but couldn't get it out.
Yeah,
I said to him.
"Rob's car has been broken down just down the road, and his phone battery has died. I was with him and I walked up to get you guys. He's with my car waiting for AA, but you can come down and collect the sofa off of him."
Me and my friend looked at each other, unsure of what to think.
"Can I get in the van and we'll go back to Rob together?" the guy asked.
"How far down the road is he?" I asked before he replied.
"Not too far, but I need to show you where to go."
At this stage, my friend pretended to get a phone call.
"Hello? Yes? Aha! No way, really? We'll be right there,"
he said before pretending to hang up his phone. He looked at me and said, "We gotta go. My dad needs us to help him with his flat tire." I nodded, knowing that it was a fake call for us to get the hell out of there and away from this creepy guy.
"We have to get going now, but we will contact you tomorrow about the sofa."
The guy just stared at us as I rolled up my window and started to drive away. Me and my friend looked at each other.
That was creepy. I got very bad vibes off that guy.
My friend said,
"Definitely," I replied to him.
We decided to drive around to the back of the car park to see if we could find out the guy was up to something or not. We could see him standing in the same spot where we left him, and he was on the phone. He put his phone down and about 2 minutes after the car pulled up, and 3 men in it, and he got in. My friend's phone started ringing, and it was the number of Rob, the guy who was supposedly giving away the sofa. He answered.
"Hey, can you meet me tomorrow? I can hold onto the sofa for you until then."
As he was on the phone, I noticed that the men in the car that had collected the creepy guy, he was also on the phone. My friend told Rob that he would contact him tomorrow, that he was busy and couldn't talk right now. At the same time that my friend hung up the phone, the guy who was in the car also finished his phone call. At this point, I explained that to my friend that there was probably no car that had broken down, and the creepy guy was trying to lure us somewhere, so as the guys in the car could do God knows what to us. We drove home and my friend blocked the number of Rob, and we never heard from them again. We reported the ad and it was removed the next day.